Stay tuned for one of the most unusual and fascinating hours you'll ever hear. The subject is UFOs. Welcome to the Paranet UFO Continuum, a one-hour program dedicated to a very strange phenomena, unidentified flying objects. Whether or not you believe UFOs exist, the controversy is real, and this program will try to get to the bottom of it. Your host is Michael Corbin, Director of Paranet Information Services, a global communications network based near Denver, Colorado, dedicated to the investigation of UFOs. We invite you to keep an open mind as we discuss one of the most fascinating and strange subjects in the world. Here's your host, Michael Corbin.
Bentwaters, United Kingdom, 1980. Bizarre UFO encounter, or is it just the overactive imaginations of a group of Air Force policemen? Whatever it was, it triggered one of the most famous and well-documented UFO cases of all time. To this day, the U.S. military denies it ever occurred, despite physical evidence, tape recordings made at the scene, and eyewitness testimony from high-ranking officers. My guest tonight, two eyewitnesses, will help us get to the bottom of it. But first, we're going to do a little bit of news, and I have an announcement to make about a new book that is now out on the market called Bizarre Colorado. It covers many unusual things about Colorado. The author is Ken Jessen. He's an engineer at Hewlett-Packard and has been there since 1965. What makes this so interesting is that Ken brings up an interesting piece of the past from Colorado history about Japanese balloon bombs, better known as the Fugo bomb, that bombs a Colorado farm, and this was back in the 40s and 50s. John Keel, a noted UFO researcher who a lot of you may or may not know, has advanced a theory that he felt that the Fugo balloon, or these Japanese balloon bombs, could explain the mysterious crash at Roswell in 1947. However, according to the article that Ken Jessen has in his book, the balloons were constructed of laminated mulberry paper to withstand the cold of the high-altitude flight across the ocean. There were 9,300 of them, which the Japanese launched. 300 of them actually made it to the U.S. There was actually, a fatality in Oregon. But they were launched between November 1944 and April 1945, and it took them about 50 to 60 hours to reach America. According to Jessen, these bombs, when they detonated, left craters about 10 inches in diameter and 4 feet deep. And clearly, you know, these weapons could not have accounted for the Roswell crater if they were only 10 inches in diameter and 4 feet deep, because as you will recall, the Roswell debris field alone was alleged to have been several football fields in length. So it was quite a large swath that was cut across Brazel's farm in 47. Anyway, in Jessen's book, there's a good drawing of one of these balloons. And if any of our Colorado listeners or anyone out there for that matter is interested in getting this book, give us a call and we'll pass your name on to the author or ask for Bizarre Colorado at local bookstores. Okay, and one piece of lighthearted news. Wyoming welcomes Jupiter refugees from Green River, Wyoming. Attention, citizens of Jupiter. Plenty of motel rooms are available in Green River. City officials concerned about the fate of Jupiterians who may have to flee their planet when it is hit by a comet later this month agreed Tuesday to invite the interplanetary refugees to settle in southwestern Wyoming. I can't think of anybody else that would want to settle there, but anyway. Green River residents often try to provide housing to motorists who become snowbound while driving along Interstate 80, and I can tell you that that is one hell of a place to get stuck in snow. So it seemed natural for the city to extend an offer of the same assistance to Jupiter, says Mayor George Eckman. Quote, the people of Wyoming are pretty friendly people, and we have a tradition of helping those in need and the traveler who may need it especially. We felt it was the neighborly thing to do. The city council passed a resolution Tuesday calling for city officials to ask that the National Aeronautics and Space Administration broadcast the invitation to Jupiter before an estimated 20 fragments of the Shoemaker-Levy 9 comet strike the planet. Now, starting on July 16th, the fragments, one perhaps up to 2 miles wide, are expected to begin piercing Jupiter's atmosphere. Green River's resolution, approved by a 5-2 vote, encourages all residents to make welcome any refugees who might cast themselves upon our mercy. That's a quote. Under the resolution, the city's airport would be renamed the Greater Green River Intergalactic Spaceport in honor of a potential visit. So there you have it, Wyoming. As many of you know, we did talk about this on a couple of shows back about July 16th, and that's allegedly going to be quite an experience when that comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 impacts the planet. There's a lot of controversy over what may or may not happen as a result of that, so I guess make sure you've got your fire and earthquake insurance paid, and we'll see what happens. Okay. Let's see. John Burroughs and James Peniston were with the law enforcement arm of the U.S. Air Force stationed at Bentwaters Air Force Base in England. In December of 1980, they were witnesses to one of the most famous and well-documented UFO cases of all time, a case which to this day the U.S. military denies ever occurred, despite physical evidence, tape recordings made at the scene, and eyewitness testimony from high-ranking officers. The so-called Bentwaters or Rendlesham Forest case has been covered in detail on both Unsolved Mysteries and Sightings programs. John Burroughs is still in the Air Force Reserve. He joins us from Phoenix, Arizona, where he is employed in the law enforcement industry. James Peniston joins us from Rockford, Illinois, and is retired. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Glad to have you on the program. John, let's start off with you for our listeners. Let's give a kind of a background about what occurred in December of 1980 from your vantage point.
What started just as a normal night, and it turned into be quite an knee-knocker. I was out on patrol with my supervisor, and he first noticed some strange lights down at the end of the base, down at the end of the road off of the east gate, and we went down there to see what it was, and we didn't get a good feeling, so we came back, and we called it in on the phone, and then they sent Jim down, and from there, he saw some of the same things that we were seeing, and a decision was made for us to go in to see what was going on.
Okay. All right. 1-800-836-2009 is our call-in line. It's 1-800-836-2009. And we'd like to have your calls this evening for our guests, John Burroughs and Jim Peniston, who are eyewitnesses at the Rendlesham Forest, or the Bentwaters Air Force Base in England, where a spectacular UFO event occurred in December of 1980. We're going to go to a break, guys, and when we come back, we'll take calls and we'll get into the background about this Bentwaters case. So stay tuned. You're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. I'm Mike Corbin, and we'll be right back.
Astronomically sensational. That's what you'll say when you see the catalog of outstanding space-related games, books, globes, posters, photos, videotapes, computer software, and CD-ROMs from Cosmic Productions. Explore the wonders of the universe with Epic 2000, a Windows program featuring an advanced planetarium with thousands of stars that lets you generate your own star maps and even control a remote telescope. Or try the Redshift CD-ROM for Macs or Windows, a fabulous simulation package that can let you navigate the Moon, Mars, or Earth with stunning realism. You'll feel like you're there. And there's much, much more. For an 18-page catalog, send $2 to Cosmic Productions, Box 1489, New Waverly, Texas, 77358. Cosmic Productions, your cosmic connection, at Box 1489, New Waverly, Texas, 77358. Or call Area 409-291-7441.
Get the latest UFO news delivered right to your door with Continuum, the official quarterly publication of Paranet Information Services. Continuum offers a serious look at the world of ufology through hard news reports and interesting and provocative interviews with leading ufologists and investigators. There's a source and resource section to help you locate information on UFOs, plus much, much more. Each issue is also packed with information from the Paranet Information Services International Communications Network. So be informed with this comprehensive publication. Subscribe now and receive 5 issues for the price of 4. Send check or money order for $18 to Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. That's Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Do it now.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. Whether or not you believe in UFOs, there's a lot about the subject you haven't heard. Stay tuned. Keep an open mind. Call in and join the discussion. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And we continue with my guests tonight, John Burroughs and James Peniston, two eyewitnesses who were at the Bentwaters Air Force Base in December of 1980. Now, Jim, what part did you play in this episode?
Well, I was the Woodbridge supervisor that night.
Okay, and what happened?
Well, it's pretty much as John said. I arrived there about 10 after midnight and observed the lights in the woods.
Okay. John?
Yeah.
Now, I've talked to you before on this, and so,
right.
You know, we got to keep the listeners abreast of what's happening at the when you went out in the woods.
Okay.
What happened when you went out there? What did you see?
Well, we got clearance to go out there, and see, this is where it kind of differs, the whole thing differs. Jim and I both kind of saw it from a different perspective, but there was the farm animals were quite upset. There was like a lot of noise and activity in the forest. The lights were quite bright, and we eventually approached into a clearing where there was, I always use the word object, but I can't say for sure it was an object. Whatever it was there in the clearing.
Can you describe what you saw there when you saw the object? What made you think it wasn't an object?
Well, the reason why I'm saying object, I use it loosely, is because I never touched it really, and I never, could tell you it was solid or felt solid to me. So, whatever this was, that's why I don't want to call it an object per se, because I'm not sure if it is an object or not. But whatever this was in the clearing there.
Okay, and what occurred then?
Well, it was there, and that's another time. There's a possibility of some missing time, and it was there, and then the object or whatever it was went up and back away from us, and for quite a while after that, it played like a cat and mouse game with us almost. It was there, then we didn't see it, then it was there, and eventually it disappeared, but I mean, it had quite an effect on all three of us when we were out there, and the way we viewed it, the way we reacted towards it, and everything else.
When you say an effect, are you talking about a physical effect, or?
Well, I think emotional, physical, everything. I mean, each one of us reacted differently towards it and how we perceived it and how, we wanted to pursue it.
Okay, all right. And wasn't that originally thought of to be, didn't you guys think it was perhaps a crash of an airliner?
Right. That's what I assumed it was when we got to the back gate, because all I got on the phone call from Central Security Control is that there was something going on at the back gate. When I got there, it appeared to be an aircraft downing or an aircraft crash. That's what I assumed it was.
Okay.
First thing I had asked John is, did a chopper go down, or did you hear anything go down over there?
And something had been picked up on radar, and that was relayed to CSC, and they thought that when Heathrow called, they thought that we had lost an aircraft or something that went down over the area because it was on radar, then it disappeared.
Now, what is CSCN? Is that the air base? What is? Did you say something was relayed to CSCN?
Right. I was in contact with CSC at that point by a landline. There's a gate check at the back gate there.
So there's a possibility that whatever this object was picked up by Woodbridge, Heathrow, and Bentwaters.
Right. When I was talking to CSC, the controller down there,
mm-hmm.
At the same time he put me on with the flight sergeant from Bentwaters, and at that time he was contacting Bentwaters Tower. And he broke back in a few minutes later and said they did track a bogey and lost contact about 15 minutes.
Was there any evidence that I had heard at one point that the landing lights toward the end of the runway had been taken out? Was that true?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
All right. Now, after you folks went out there into the forest and you had made contact with us, I understand that Colonel Halt, who was the base commander, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Colonel Halt was also called out there, and
that happened. That was what's crazy about this. Something went on three nights in a row. The first night on our incident, nobody was out there but just the three of us. And the second night, they saw stuff out in the woods again. And that's on the third night is when Colonel Halt and his party went out there.
Okay, John. The first night, how long did the encounter last?
That's a good question.
Well, this is where John and I actually differ on the actual contact point at in the woods.
Okay.
I believe it was about 25 minutes. What's your estimate on that, John?
You know, that it just seemed like it went on forever, but I'd say the whole thing took at least, in my mind, at least an hour or longer by the time, because we walked a long ways after we came up in the first area where whatever it was there.
Okay, when you got, after this evening occurred, were you briefed by anyone, or?
Well, the following morning, and jump in any time, John, if my memory's failing me here. When we come back out of the woods, this must have been around 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning. I think it was just starting to get light. And we were met by the off-going security people, and they took us back to CSC. We were briefly...
Jim, let me interrupt real quick. Just for my benefit and our listeners, what is CSC?
Well, that's Central Security Control. That is the nerve center for security operations for Bentwaters and Woodbridge.
Okay, go ahead.
They basically have about 60 people that work for them, and they control the operations.
Okay. Go ahead and continue then.
And we got back there, and I do believe we talked to either the lieutenant or the captain, and I think that was basically all we talked to that morning.
Right. We got, basically, he debriefed us saying that we weren't crazy as far as, because we had some doubts in our minds because we didn't know what was going on. I mean, it was like, it's hard to explain this, that maybe people have been involved in something like this. You want to believe something happened, but you also don't want to believe it happened because, first of all, you wonder what people are going to think about you. Second of all, you can't explain what you saw.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically said, went over what the radar tower scene and everything else. And then from there, we went out to the back out to the site to check the area to see if there was any proof that anything had happened.
No, this was during the day?
No, this was in the morning.
This
was
in the morning.
Probably about 6:37 in the morning.
Okay. Then you said it was 3 days in a row now. What happened the next night?
Well, the next night, that was our last night of work. So the next night, when they had changeover, that flight that night, obviously everybody was looking out there, and they saw lights out there again, and the shift commander went out into that area again, and I guess it upset her quite a bit, and she saw some weird things. I never did get to talk to her, but the people that had worked that next night told me that she was visibly shaken and upset from it and reported it back in. And I guess from there, that's why the third night they decided Colonel Halt wanted to go out there and figure out what was really going on. Because, I mean, now you're talking about 3 nights in a row, something showing up outside an Air Force installation. And remember, this was back in 1980 during the Cold War. So you're talking about a substantial possible security problem outside a NATO base.
Sure. What speaking of that, now, Bentwaters and Woodbridge both are American bases, is that correct?
Well, we were leasing them from the British, right.
Okay, and they were NATO bases.
Right.
Okay. Now, when this occurred the first night, John, how many personnel were out there with you besides Peniston and yourself?
There were just three of us that actually were out there, but there were several people on the fringes that were watching it from the distance.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Right, we had 11 assigned to the base at Woodbridge, and those security people, you know, they observed the phenomenon in the woods too. And also keep in mind that, to give your listeners a little better idea about Bentwaters Woodbridge, they're separated bases, approximately about 2.5 miles by Rendlesham Forest, and that's the forest area where we first observed the craft.
Okay. All right, we're going to go to a break. 1-800-836-2009 is our call-in number. 1-800-836-2009. Our guests tonight are John Burroughs and James Peniston. We're talking about the Bentwaters United Kingdom Air Force Base incident 1980. We'll come back from a break and continue. This is Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum.
Paranet Information Services is your electronic window on the world of UFOs, accessible by computer and modem. Paranet keeps you up to date on the world pulse of ufology, with sighting reports, interesting findings, and general discussion on the mysterious UFO enigma. Paranet features one of the most comprehensive text file libraries in the world on the paranormal, available for a small online fee. So plug into power and knowledge through Paranet. The BBS number is available 24 hours a day. Call the data line at area 303-429-2713. That's 303-429-2713. Or for more information, contact Paranet Information Services at area 303-429-2654. That's 303-429-2654.
There they were in aisle six. She by the chocolate frosting, he by the jumbo straws. Their eyes met. They drew closer. She spoke. "Excuse me. Do you know where the garbanzo beans are?" "Yes," he said. "Let me take you there." And they floated down the aisle. "Garbanzo beans," he said, handing them to her. "No," she said. "First, the label." He looked at her with a question in his eyes. So she told him about products that were being made from paper, plastic, metal, and glass that she'd been recycling, and how recycling keeps working only when she buys products that say made from recycled materials. Oh, how she cared for the earth, and how he cared for her. "Your number," he said. "May I call you?" She smiled. "Just call 1-800-CALL-EDF. Ask for a free brochure on buying recycled."
This message from the Ad Council, the U.S. EPA, and the Environmental Defense Fund.
UFOs for real, or are they just fiction? To find out, stay with us for more of the Paranet UFO Continuum with your host, Michael Corbin.
And we continue. The number is 1-800-836-2009, FO 2009. We invite anyone out there who might be active or retired military who might like to speak with these gentlemen or call up and talk about an incident that they have been involved in. Our guest tonight is John Burroughs and Jim Peniston. These gentlemen were air policemen at the Bentwaters Air Force Base in England in 1980, in December, actually, when over 3 days, consecutive days, apparently something very unusual happened. John, the first night now, when this occurrence happened, you said that there was you experienced some strange feelings and things.
Right.
Were there any kind of other, you know, physical effects from this? Now, you said the animals at the... I take it there was a farm nearby?
Yeah, we went through this area where there was, like, cows and different things like that and the birds. I mean, at one point, the forest to me was like, it was like daylight. And, I mean, all the birds were going nuts. The animals, you could hear the animals, like the cows making noises in the background and everything else. And whatever was out there was stirring everything up.
Okay, and how about any electromagnetic effects or...
That's been asked me over and over again, and... I mean, my body was like, I was just like, it was like I was like in slow motion almost. And there was weird feelings going through me as far as like, you didn't feel secure at all. And I'm not a type of person that feels insecure very often, but I'll tell you, I felt like I was exposed to, you know, I was wide open that night.
Yeah. Jim, did you experience the same type of...
Yes. I agree wholeheartedly with John. By meaning electromagnetic, do you mean like... static electricity feeling?
Well, sure. Was there any interruption of your vehicles or radio communications or anything like that?
Right. We had to establish a radio relay with the third person. That's why he wasn't inside the tree line with us, is because we were using him for contact. We had lost contact with our control centers.
Now, I'm curious to know, if something like this occurs over, and if I'm not mistaken, you gentlemen were exposed to this the first night for several hours. What about photographs and, you know, some type of military response? Was that attempted, or was anything like that done?
On my end, I was basically pretty much, after I wrote a statement, left alone, but Jim had, he had quite a bit of follow-up, and maybe he can explain to you what went on from there.
Okay.
Right. The initial feeling, even afterwards, I think John feels the same way about this, is even though we're looking at it, there was still disbelief.
Okay.
We're observing this.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to use some type of logical approach to this, trying to piece it together, saying that, well, maybe it's this or maybe it's that. And it was definitely nothing that we had observed before. The statement I use quite a bit is that it was not in the James Book of aircraft.
Okay.
So what I did the following day is I came back from my home in Ipswich, and I took plaster Paris cast of the landing area.
Okay.
And I still have the cast in my possession, you know, now.
Did anyone try to take those from you?
I had three of them. When I shipped back from England to the States, I had one in my household baggage, my household goods,
mm-hmm.
that was shipped by ship. And I took the other two with me in my attaché case. And the only ones I got are the ones in my attaché case, because when I unpacked my goods, the other one was missing. I'm not saying that anybody took them. I'm just saying that I lost it.
Okay. All right. Okay. So basically then, have you had any other involvement, Jim? Was there any other coercion or anything like that?
Pardon me, I didn't hear that.
I said, was there any other coercion or any other involvement following your experience with the with this case?
We had initially several meetings at the base with Air Force officials. I think running all the way up to 1984, up to 3 years, 4 years after the incident.
Okay.
I was re-interviewed by OSI in 1990, again about the incident.
Now, was that prior to the interest by Unsolved Mysteries?
No, that was it was after the broadcast. Now, as a matter of fact, it was exactly 2 days after the broadcast in the States.
Okay. And what do they want with you?
Well, they pretty much wanted to know if I was involved with that incident and or any, with the show. And I said, no, I wasn't involved with the show at all. And they asked me a series of questions about it, and they said they'd get back with me. The first thing I asked them was, well, is this still classified? And they said, well, we'll check. And they got back with me about a week later, and they said, no, that it's not classified because the incident never happened. So at that point in time, I was pretty befuddled about
sure.
it, because that's like, you know, we experienced it. We know it happened.
Sure.
There was a memorandum about it. There was involvement of over probably 80 people at one time at the base.
That's incredible. That's incredible. 80 people.
Well, you have to include the security flight of about mm-hmm. 65 people, and you have a law enforcement flight.
Now, was this the 80 people now? Is that the third day?
I believe that was the shift for all 3 days. I think there's a minimum there was that.
A cumulative total of about 80 people.
Right. Some nights, I'm not sure. You have to ask John this. I mean, there might have been less working. There might have been not as much sky observation of it.
Mm-hmm.
The night that I was involved in the first night with John, it was very limited on the sky observation after it went up above the tree line. Matter of fact, it was there and then gone. But going back to what John was saying about in the woods, the other odd thing was when we were approaching it was the intense disruption of wildlife from deer and forest animals.
Mm-hmm.
Why, I'm not sure. There was pretty intense light. See, at first, that's another thing. It's when I was at a distance from the east gate, when we first observed it, it appeared to be a fire.
In the woods? Are you talking about a fire down on the ground or in the sky?
Right, like combustible material, like an aircraft fire.
Okay.
And then when I got up to the tree line then, and the colors got distinct, they're red, blue, yellow, and an immense amount of white light coming at the top of the object, and and the bottom. And going back to what John said, it illuminated the woods at that point.
Now, was this object, I believe I recall reading somewhere, and I believe it was Clear Intent, Barry Greenwood's book, was there not a description of the object? Now, John mentioned he couldn't really necessarily call it an object, but was there not an appearance of maybe a translucent shape of something that they could see, you
on
guys could see through?
Night, there was objects flying around in the sky, including was discussed on Unsolved Mysteries, and they were shooting beams of light down and everything else. There was one individual that has done this case, and I still can't figure out why he's done this case. A lot of misjustice and claiming a lot of things that, you know, there's been researchers that have worked on this for years and they cannot back up anything he says. But there was something out there other than whatever the main object was on the third night that was out in the distance again, and there was some definitely like blue light transparent objects that were flying around on the third night. I don't remember seeing them on the first night. Do you, Jim?
No, I only observed the main object. And yes, there was a physical description. I mean, even from the night, the following morning, and the subsequent days after that, that the statements were made, at least my statements. You know, the object measured 3 by 3 meters. I mean, we put distinct measurements down on it.
Jim, what's 3 by 3 meters? In...
Well, a meter is, I believe, roughly 39 inches, so let's say it's about 3 feet. So
3 feet by 3 feet?
Be 9 feet by 9 feet.
Okay.
It was from metallic appearance to a dark, opaque, black glass-like in appearance, smooth.
Okay. We're going to go to take another break. When we come back, our guests are John Burroughs and Jim Peniston. 1-800-836-2009 is the call-in talk line. 1-800-836-2009. And we'll continue in just a moment on the Paranet UFO Continuum. I'm Michael Corbin.
Get the latest UFO news delivered right to your door with Continuum, the official quarterly publication of Paranet Information Services. Continuum offers a serious look at the world of ufology through hard news reports and interesting and provocative interviews with leading ufologists and investigators. There's a source and resource section to help you locate information on UFOs, plus much, much more. Each issue is also packed with information from the Paranet Information Services International Communications Network. So be informed with this comprehensive publication. Subscribe now and receive 5 issues for the price of 4. Send check or money order for $18 to Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. That's Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Do it now.
Pilots. When you fly, you need convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that can provide you with the services and treatment you deserve. The Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides are what you need. These free pocket-sized guides give you information you need about large and small airports all over the country. Information like radio channels, runway systems, coordinates, and taxiways, as well as fuel and aircraft services provided at the airport, along with local businesses catering to private pilots. It's yours free. Ask the fixed base operator at your favorite stops to carry the Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides, or call Area 303-669-1800. That's 303-669-1800. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Again, talk to the FBO at your favorite destinations or call Skyway Publications at 303-669-1800.
You're listening to one of the most unusual programs you'll ever hear. It's the Paranet UFO Continuum, and it deals with one of the most fascinating subjects around. Once again, here's your host, the Director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
And we continue on. Our guests tonight are John Burroughs. He's in from Phoenix, Arizona. And Jim Penniston, who's in Rockford, Illinois, where, by the way, we have affiliate WROK receiving this program. And the subject tonight is the Bentwaters Air Force Base incident, which occurred in the United Kingdom in December of 1980. John, take us to the third day now and talk about what your experience was. This, I guess, was the grand finale of this.
As far as what I was involved in, yeah. I've actually talked to people that said this took place maybe over four or five more nights. There were different things that were going on. But
okay.
I went back out there the third night because after hearing it happen the second night, I wanted to get a handle on what was going on. And when I got out there on the third night, there was already stuff going on, and Colonel Holt was in the middle of all this. But the bottom line is when I got out there, the top off seeing whatever the main object was, there was these blue lights flying around up in the sky in the distance. One of them actually came over the top of us down through a truck. Up until that point, they had light alls out there in the area where the first night had taken place, trying, hoping whatever it got close enough they could light the area up, and they wouldn't even work for them. And once the lights went past, whatever that was went past that the light alls, they came on briefly and went back off. This experience to me, you know, I've never experienced anything like it before or after, and, you know, it's changed my life. And when people come back and try to tell you it was a lighthouse or nothing really happened out there, I mean, it's such a joke. I mean, because, I mean, the feelings that you have and what went on is just unbelievable.
How has this thing affected you, John? I mean, you know, 10 years, 15 years later.
It never goes away. I mean, there's always somebody that wants to talk to you about it or hear about it. Jim and I are flying over to London in another week or so to London's TV is going to recreate the whole thing. They're going to spend 4 days recreating it,
mm-hmm.
so they can air it this fall. And the popularity of this, as far as people wanting to know what happened, is just unbelievable. Unsolved Mysteries is one of the most successful shows ever. CNN did an initial piece back in the early 80s. It was their most popular special assignments ever. And I don't know how it went with sightings, but I mean, it just won't go away, and I have trouble sometimes not getting so involved in this. I want to keep a perspective on it, but sometimes it's hard not to want to get involved in this because you want to know. I mean, you really want to know what is going on, and it's uneasy not knowing for sure what went on other than I saw something, but, I mean, the effects it had on me and the fact could it come back again is another thing that bothers me.
Sure. Have you ever had any kind of a subsequent encounter or anything like that since that event?
Nothing really to speak of. I mean, you know, but nothing like this, you know. And then, like I said, you want to be real careful because after what happened to me, I want to be real careful and not think I see something flying around.
Sure.
I want to rationalize what I'm seeing. And I still want to rationalize what happened out there, and I don't know if I ever will be able to, and that kind of bothers me too.
Mm-hmm. Jim, how about for you? How has it affected you to this day?
Well, pretty much along the same lines as John. I mean, people are always asking and inquisitive, I think, more about it. And I've been in many situations where, you know, it's been talked about, and a lot of times I just sat there and said nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And not even, you know, say I was involved. One of the interesting things, I can't say it's directly related, but I'm saying it's highly suspect, is within 5 months of the incident, I was diagnosed with a balance disorder in the inner ear, and I've been suffering from that ever since. And I'm not sure if, you know, what it's caused from. The doctors can't figure it out either. But I personally feel that it was an effect from maybe the static electricity or from the event itself that night. But I'm not a doctor, and the doctors can't prove or disprove that either.
Is it something that's being treated under your... under your military insurance type policy?
What was that?
In other words, is this condition something that's being treated as an on the job injury or anything like that?
Oh, yes, it is. As a matter of fact, I'm receiving disability for it right now.
Okay, all right. We got a call on line one, Brother John in KNRY, Santa. What is that? Monterey, California. John, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
How are you doing? Very good program as usual.
Thank you.
I've got a question. On the Unsolved Mystery programs, they played a tape recording of the Colonel's eyewitness account of the events.
Right.
Remember that? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Right.
And I understand there was a lot more that was very interesting that they didn't air on that program. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I've got a copy of the tape. It runs about 20 minutes long, and there's a lot more to what than what's been played on the different shows. But and I've never been able to pin Colonel Hull down, but I think there's even more than what's ever been released. I think he's got a longer version because, I mean, his event took place over about four and a half hours that night. So I think there's even more than what I've heard that he's had. So, and somewhere circulating, there's a tape of all the radio traffic, and I've never been able to get my hands on it, but it's out there, and that would really blow this wide open as far as the reactions of people on the radio and what they're seeing and stuff. And I just would like to see that surface, because the critics would say it was a lighthouse. There's no way guys like, you know, what we've been trained to do would be reacting towards the lighthouse in the way we were.
I'm curious how the Air Force was able to get over 80 witnesses to believe that nothing happened.
Well, the witnesses believe it happened, and believe it or not, most people say they never admitted to it happened. They actually have. To CNN, when they did their special report, they admitted in writing that it happened, but they stood by Colonel Hull's memorandum or whatever as far as what took place, and they kind of dumped it on his shoulders, and I think that's something that he's carried over the years, that they never really supported him other than to say that, well, what he wrote is what happened, and it's up to him to explain it. And I think that's always ate away at him a little bit.
Okay. Caller John, do you have any other questions?
Well, I guess there wasn't anything too interesting on the tape to comment on. Did they send any helicopters out in the evening with night vision equipment or any other sensing devices?
I couldn't hear him.
There was night vision goggles or a device. That's what I think it was, a starlight scope at the time used.
Who was using?
That's standard. We had them from the armory. We could pull them out anytime we wanted to.
Jim, who was using the star scope?
Any of the security supervisors or law enforcement supervisors can use.
Colonel Hall, his group had a pair out that third night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do believe so, along with the lieutenant.
Have either of you had extensive contact with Colonel Hall since the incident?
Yes.
Okay, and what is his feeling about it?
Well, he can't explain what phenomena he did see from what he told me. He is, I think, along with John and I, he is physically shook over the incident.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what is bothering him is the same thing that's bothering us. Is
you're trying to figure out what it is?
Yeah, and lack of answers. Lack of answers and the failure to produce evidence that we know that was recorded.
Okay.
Or produced.
John, have you got any other questions?
Were there any video tapes taken of the event?
That's highly contested. There was some pictures that were taken. Supposedly what did come back was fogged over. Jim, did you take any pictures
of
the actual landing?
Yes, I took pictures. It was standard procedure for us, at least for the Woodbridge supervisor and the Bentwater supervisor, to carry 35-millimeter cameras in the trucks. And the reason for that was basically at the time for perimeter encroachment, you know, by we had high terrorism at the time, and that's why we would carry them. And there was photos taken. There was film turned into the base photo lab.
Okay. Now, I know one of the theories that has been proposed as an explanation for this has to do with psychotronics. Do either of you guys know what psychotronics are, or do you have any kind of opinion about that?
I've read a little bit about it.
I know nothing about it.
Okay.
My point on that is, and that's a valid point. That area is well known for developed radar and everything else. If our military or the British or the American government had the kind of ability to control us back in 1980, it's scary what they could do to us today. What we were seeing out there. Anything's possible, because I can't explain what happened. But
psychotronics, in a nutshell, is basically, like John suggested, controlling, being able to control personnel utilizing directed energy weapons or different types of devices such as that. You know, high-intensity electromagnetic radiation and you know, its effects like microwave radiation and that kind of thing. John,
yes.
Thank you for John, the caller. John, thank you for your call. And we're going to go to a break, and when we return, we're going to wrap the program up, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Bentwaters case in 1980 with our guests John Burroughs and Jim Peniston. And we'll be back in just a moment on the Paranet UFO Continuum. I'm Michael Corbin.
The Paranet UFO Continuum is pleased to offer a number of exciting products. Now available are cassette tapes of previous shows, available for $8 each, or two for $12, or four for $20. You can also order MyCap and Paranet BBS memberships, subscriptions to Continuum, Paranet's quarterly newsletter, as well as the UT1 UFO Tracker Kit, containing everything you need when you come across something unusual in the sky. Paranet and MyCap are also proud to offer a stunning black t-shirt with a background of galaxies, stars, and comets, and the Paranet and MyCap logos, as well as a beautiful blue-green planet Earth. When you order from Paranet, you're also helping to keep this program on the air. So call now. To place an order or for more information, call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Paranet, your window on the universe, at 1-800-836-6381.
If one of us voted in this election, would anybody listen? If 1,000 of us voted in this election, would anybody listen? If 100,000 of us voted in this election, would anybody listen? If 1,000,000 of us voted in this election, would anybody listen? They would listen!
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is the Paranet UFO Continuum, a weekly program dedicated to the mysterious and fascinating world of UFOs. If you're interested in learning more about Paranet, the world's foremost communications network dealing with the UFO phenomena, call us at area 303-429-2654 or write to Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And we continue on the last stretch of the program tonight. We've got about 3.5 minutes, guys. I wanted to delve a little bit deeper into the psychotronics issue real quick, if we could. John, wasn't there some deaths associated with the cattle in the area after the incident, and wasn't there radiation detected?
I know there was radiation detected. I've heard stories, and now Jim might be able to explain that a little bit better because he spent a lot more time over there after I left, but I'd heard stories that the farmer in this area, everything he had was moved. They moved him to southern England, and there had been some problems with his livestock and stuff, but Jim might be able to go into that a little better.
Jimmy, any other information on that?
Well, the radiation levels that I know of were recorded at over 7 times the normal background level of radiation.
Uh-huh.
Within about 6 months of the incident, but I mean all of them, they cut the forest down.
They went in there and completely removed
everything,
didn't they?
They just completely leveled the forest.
Is it still bare to this day?
Yeah, as far as I know, it is, and I suspect that John and I will find out in the next couple of weeks just how bare it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the area supposedly where whatever landed or was, it was down there, they never could get anything to grow in that area again. From what I understood, and I haven't been back there, that area was like, it's kind of like a little barren area.
Okay. One other question I want to ask real quick of both of you guys. Did any of you at any time ever see any kind of entities or anything like that associated with this?
No.
No?
John? The only thing I could say, okay, those blue lights, whatever they meant, I mean, you could possibly say they were entities. I mean, you know, depending on how you want to view it. But whatever they were, you know, reacting to things and doing things. So, I mean, you could possibly say whatever that was possibly an entity. I don't know.
I would say it was intelligent. Yes.
You would say it was?
Oh, yes. Did we see people or any kind of thing like that? No. But it was definitely a controlled flight. There's definitely signs of intelligence there.
Okay, so something definitely did happen out there, absolutely, undoubtedly.
Undoubtedly.
Okay.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah, okay. Well, guys, thank you very much for joining us this evening on the program, and I wish you a safe trip over to the UK. You're going over the 23rd, right?
Right, right.
Okay, and you're going to do something for the BBC over there. We might have you back on subsequent to this to find out if there's any updates or anything else like that.
Yeah, that's good. Fine with me.
Okay.
I enjoy being on your program.
Great. Thank you very much, John and Jim. Thank you.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay, this wraps up our program for the evening, and we are going to see you next week. Probably, we haven't got anything lined up definitely, but we're looking at probably a guest who is going to talk to us about remote viewing, and we have an intelligence expert coming up to talk about secret military projects on another program on the Paranet UFO Continuum. So, until next week, I'm Michael Corbin telling you to keep your eyes on the sky. We'll see you next week. Good night.